It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. I'm Bill Price. The vote to impeach.
The cow's out the bar. They're only doing that because of the pressure.
That is our top story at noon. The U.S. House will vote on Thursday to officially launch impeachment proceedings against President Trump. New York Democrat Anthony Brindisi.
We should all be sitting back and reviewing the evidence as it comes out, not making any judgments beforehand.
This is just one more kind of make it up as you go along example.
Ohio Republican Jim Jordan says the House Speaker called for a Thursday vote because she knew public opinion on impeachment was waning.
The reason she's going to have this vote is because the American people understand it is a sham. They understand it isn't fair.
But with the vote comes a predicament for the White House. Political analyst Leonard Steinhorn.
It's going to become much more difficult for the White House to resist this impeachment inquiry. Why? Because all along they've been saying that you need a House vote authorizing the impeachment process. Now they're going to get one. What's the next line of defense on the White House?
And while we don't know the next line of defense on the White House, we do know the next line of testimony. That comes today from a military man. Correspondent Nancy Cordes says the insider was on the phone call between President Trump and his Ukrainian counterpart.
Alexander Vindman is an Iraq war veteran who oversees Ukraine policy at the National Security Council. He'll tell congressional investigators today that he grew concerned after listening in on the president's July phone call. I did not think it was proper to demand that a foreign government investigate a U.S. citizen. The request to investigate Biden and his son had nothing to do with national security, he says.
Nancy Cordes on Capitol Hill. Congressional Republicans say Thursday's vote and today's testimony will do nothing to change their minds about the impeachment probe.
I strongly oppose any attempt to legitimize the Soviet-style impeachment process.
Louisiana Republican Steve Scalise. Georgia Republican Doug Collins.
This is a sham. It's not that this is something to simply cover their problems that they've had with this investigation all along, putting Adam Schiff in a closed room, leaking out stuff that he wants to leak out, and making it appear to be something it's not.
Thursday's vote will put lawmakers on the record when it comes to impeachment. It'll also set the stage for public hearings from witnesses. Up until now, everything's been done behind closed doors. Forced out by fire. That is the other big story at noon.
People are getting fatigued with the red flag warnings. We really have a critical period coming up. We got to get through.
Both ends of California burning today as wildfires continue to grow. High winds fanning the flames in wine country. That's where we find correspondent Steve Futterman.
This is what worries fire crews. Strong, gusty, unpredictable winds. The winds here in Northern California will be stronger.
It's going to be a gradual ramp up through the day.
And by the end of the day, we could have gusts above 50 miles an hour. Certainly not the 100 mile an hour gusts we saw this weekend, but still enough to cause problems and put many homes in danger.
In Southern California, meantime, the high winds also posing a problem. L.A. Mayor Eric Garcetti.
Be prepared for two nights at least that the overwhelming majority of folks will be out of your home.
Thousands of folks have already fled their homes in wealthy neighborhoods like Brentwood. This guy says it doesn't take much for you to lose everything.
It's one ember, and it's that, and your entire life is gone.
There is a glimmer of hope, however. Forecasters say tomorrow the winds should start to die down in California. We got them both. President Trump says this past weekend's raid in Syria that took out the leader of ISIS also took out the terror group's number two guy. California Republican Kevin McCarthy.
Just this morning, the president tweeted and confirming the next in line has confirmation is dead as well. We need to thank our intelligence community, our men and women, and this administration for their commitment and their follow-through.
McCarthy says even though we've taken out the leadership of ISIS, the terror group still poses a threat around the world. Boeing CEO Dennis Muilenburg defending his airline and his leadership before lawmakers on Capitol Hill today. He's answering questions about two deadly crashes over the past year involving the 737 MAX 8.
We're confident with the updates that we're making that once the MAX returns to the skies, It'll be one of the safest airplanes ever to fly.
Today's testimony from the top guy at Boeing comes on the one-year anniversary of the crash of Lion Air Flight 610 in Indonesia that killed all 189 people on board. A lot of new vehicles today come with systems that detect, then brake for pedestrians. The reviews on that technology are mixed. The Subaru Outback and Nissan Maxima scored well. The Hyundai Sonata and Ford Fusion did not.
Most of it is likely in the software and in the algorithms because many of the sensors are the same.
David Harkey, president of the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, 20% of all fatalities involving vehicles in this country also involve pedestrians. Still to come this Tuesday, banning tackle football in New York, fixing guardrails in Pennsylvania, and the Wildcat Closet in Johnson City.
Good afternoon. A mild day underway across the area, but we've got a storm system on the way. It delivers wind and rain later this week and a charge of chilly air by the time the weekend is here. I'll be back with forecast details in 10 minutes.
Thanks, Kevin. Checking the stories making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania Tuesday, October 29th. More than 50,000 New Yorkers cast ballots in the first weekend of early voting in the Empire State. Colleen Anderson, the commissioner for the Monroe County Board of Elections.
We are happy with what is going on now and how our polling sites are going and how happy voters are.
The early voting polling sites open Saturday. They'll stay open till Sunday, November 3rd. So far, most folks say they like the convenience of early voting.
We beat the crowd. This was a piece of cake.
This is really easy, fast, and it worked really great.
Having this longer period to do it is awesome.
This is the first year of early voting in New York. A new report calling into question the effectiveness of tuition-free college in New York. Family Life's Bob Price.
Yeah, the report by the pro-business group, the Empire Center, blasts the Excelsior Scholarship Program as wasteful, crudely designed, and regressive. It's designed to eliminate tuition for households in certain income brackets. Undergrads enrolling in SUNY or CUNY schools whose families have an income of less than $125,000 a year qualify for the savings. The report, though, states that the program ignores 40% of the state's college population who opt for private education. As a result, Excelsior scholarships have only been awarded to 24,000 students. The governor predicted nearly 40 times more students would take advantage of the savings. Bob Price, Family Life News.
Thank you, Bob. Should 12-year-olds be allowed to play tackle football? It's a question New York State lawmakers mulling over once again. A public hearing today in New York City to talk about the idea of banning tackle football for anyone under the age of 12.
No, I really don't think it's a good idea.
Dick Gallagher with the Greater High School Sports Hall of Fame in Western New York says youth football today actually safer than what it was a decade ago.
Today, it's much safer playing football, particularly for youth football, the way that they're being taught how to tackle.
The Seattle Children's Research Institute, however, says 5% of youth football players sustain at least one concussion each and every year. But Dick Gallagher says every sport has its risks, and it's unfair to single out football.
When you play a game, I don't care if it's football or soccer or basketball, you can be hurt. And some of the injuries that occur in girls' soccer is much higher than football.
Today's public hearing in the Big Apple will include former NFL players, coaches, and doctors as New York State considers banning organized youth tackle football. Family Life's Jeremy Miller.
Right now, more concerns are being raised about the long-term health effects of tackle football on children, but there's not an actual proposal to ban it yet. Assembly Health Committee Chair Richard Gottfried will listen to testimony about the potential impacts on programs and children, as well as the current impacts of the sport on kids. Governor Cuomo signed legislation last month that requires all tackle football programs to provide parents with packets that contain information about concussions and other possible injuries for football players. The law is set to take effect on December 2nd. Jeremy Miller, Family Life News.
Thank you, Jeremy. A football player at North Schuylkill High School in Schuylkill County, PA, badly hurt in a game last Friday night. Star quarterback Jaden Leiby broke his neck while making a tackle. School Superintendent Robert Ackle.
This does affect more than just our football team. It affects our whole student body and our whole community.
Assistant coach Joe Tomchison.
The love and support, not just in our building, but in Schuylkill County and eastern Pennsylvania, has just been unbelievable. And that's what's going to get us through, you know, these difficult times.
The senior star football player flown to a hospital where he had surgery this past weekend. During this Friday night's game, North Schuylkill will be selling T-shirts and wristbands to help out that family. Pennsylvania could soon see driverless vehicles on public roads. A measure's been introduced in the State House that would allow autonomous shuttle vehicles on PennDOT-approved highways.
There's been a lot of miles that have been driven on testing the safety and security of these vehicles, and now they're really ready to go to market. We just need the enabling legislation to get that done.
Representative Jim Marshall of Beaver County, Pennsylvania, says if lawmakers greenlight the proposal, driverless vehicles could be a reality soon in Pennsylvania. PennDOT says it's going to cost $45 million to replace the guardrails on all the interstates in the Commonwealth over the next 10 years. Family Life's Terry Diener.
It's a mandate from the federal government, but Pennsylvania taxpayers are being handed the bill. The cost will come from PennDOT's current maintenance budget. That means some road repairs could have to wait. PennDOT says it will still be out fixing potholes and plowing roads, but you may see more crews out on the interstates than usual as they start prioritizing replacing the guardrails next year. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
Thank you, Terry. A new poll shows millennials are increasingly embracing socialism over capitalism, according to a survey by YouGov. 70% of Americans between the ages of 23 and 38 somewhat likely to cast a ballot for a socialist. Only 50% of millennials have a favorable view of capitalism. A poll also shows one out of every three millennials today A-OK with communism. Western New Yorkers are stressed out. Family Life's Brandon Dixon.
The study by the Population Health Collaborative found that nearly 23% of employees in the Buffalo area have high stress, above the national average of 16%. The Queen City also had more than 34% of workers with hypertension and above average rates of diabetes, cancer, and asthma. Researchers tell News 4 this could prevent new businesses from being drawn to the area.
Cities that we compared ourselves to, if they're trying to compete for the same jobs the same investments as Western New York, they can say, hey, we've got a healthier workforce, a less costly workforce, our health costs are cheaper than in Western New York. Come here instead of Buffalo.
They add it can also cause a strain on a company's medical cost and affect employee productivity. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
Thank you, Brandon. The Johnson City Central School District near Binghamton has opened up a closet to help students in need. It's called the Wildcat Closet.
They can find school supplies, backpacks, clothing, hygiene items,
athletic shoes, formal dresses, formal wear, sweatshirts, hoodies, spirit wear, Johnson City spirit wear.
Johnson City English teachers Donna Jeter and Katie Beerworth help manage that closet. They say they've witnessed firsthand the impact it's had.
I saw a student walking down the hall and his backpack was broken. I was like, go grab a new one. And he did. And then he didn't have to walk around with a broken zipper all day. A little thing, but it's a little thing.
Not many schools get to do this, and a lot of kids feel like insecure that they don't have certain stuff, so having everything here helps them feel more confident and feel like they have somebody they could go to.
Taylor Blanton, a student at Johnson City High School, all of the items in the Wildcat Closet have been donated by the community, and teachers say it's amazing to witness the students who use the closet only take the items they need. The Steelers come roaring back Monday Night Football. Sunny time, 2-minute drill.
Yeah, Monday Night Football. Steelers spotted the winless Dolphins a 14-0 lead before scoring 27 unanswered points in a 27-14 win in Pittsburgh. Steelers have won 18 straight Monday Night games in Pittsburgh to improve to 3-4 in the year. Head coach Mike Tomlin incurred.
We get an opportunity to be 4-4 at the turn, and where we've been, that's significant. We don't take that lightly.
The World Series resumes tonight in Houston. Astros host the Nationals in Game 6. Steven Strasburg on facing Justin Verlander.
What he does against us is really irrelevant to what I have to focus on, and that's their lineup and finding a way to you know, keep him at bay.
The home team has lost all five games, Houston winning three straight in D.C. to take a 3-2 series lead in the best-of-seven matchup. But Astros manager A.J. Hinch says don't count on a Game 7.
Our confidence level is good. We're going home to play in front of one of the best crowds in the playoffs and in the World Series and hopefully get one more win.
The Astros would host Game 7 tomorrow if the Nationals win tonight. The Phillies hoping to make it to the playoffs, introducing former Yankee manager Joe Girardi. He says he's in Philadelphia because...
I'm selfish. I want to win. And that's why I came here, because I think there's a great opportunity to win here because you have dedicated ownership, you have a dedicated general manager in front office, you have dedicated fans that support this club that want the same thing.
To the eyes, Coyotes slid by the Sabres 3-2 in Buffalo in a shootout. Sabres head coach Ralph Krueger.
We raised our game again and pushed hard for the win and had the opportunity there.
To the NBA, Kyle Lowry and Pascal Siakam combined for 50 points. Raptors topped the Magic 104-95. Knicks rallied from 18 down in the second half to beat the Bulls 105-98. Joel Embiid returned to the lineup, scoring 36 points, pulled down 13 boards. Sixers beat the Hawks 105-103, and the Cavaliers fall to the Milwaukee Bucks 129-112. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolphia.
Thank you, Sonny. Still to come on this Tuesday edition of the Noon Report, House votes on impeachment, sexuality, and the church, and free tacos tomorrow.
The term ecocide might be a new one, but it's becoming a thing, especially in court, and it's loaded with worldview implications. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. With the modern environmental movement, which emerged in the late 60s and early 70s, came a new term, ecocide. It means the deliberate destruction of the natural environment. Now, it's not clear who coined the phrase, but it was then Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme who first called for it to be declared a crime in 1972. Palme's call came barely two decades after the International Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide went into effect, and at a time when many nations, including the U.S., had yet to ratify the Convention on Genocide. And yet, here was a head of state demanding that trees, rivers, and other inanimate objects be given the same legal protections that the civilized world had not yet fully extended to human beings. Sadly, that past is just a prologue. Just last month, a group called Stop Ecocide began to lay the legal groundwork for prosecuting Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro on charges of ecocide. The recent fires in the Amazon rainforest, the group argued, made Bolsonaro a poster boy for the need for a crime of ecocide. The effort is supported by the Hague's top prosecutor, who wants to prioritize cases involving the destruction of the environment, the illegal exploitation of natural resources, or the illegal dispossession of land. And while there's no current legal basis for such a prosecution, it's not as much of a stretch as you'd think. Several countries have already recognized the idea of environmental personhood, under which rivers and other parts of nature have been given legal rights that can be enforced in a court of law. One recent example is the Whanganui River in New Zealand, which in 2017 was granted the same legal rights as a human being. Actually, the Whanganui has more legal rights than some human beings in New Zealand. The unborn there can currently be destroyed in cases of hardship to the mother, and new proposed legislation would effectively legalize abortion right up to the moment of birth with no legal consequences. So, unlike the Whanganui and other rivers, the unborn there would not be entitled to legal representation or have their day in court. The appropriate word for this would be feticide, but when was the last time you heard anyone who wasn't pro-life use that one? The very idea of ecocide represents an enormous shift in our thinking about the relationship between humans and creation. Rather than embracing our role as stewards or conservators of the natural order, humans are most often today seen as nature's adversary. To badly paraphrase John the Baptist, we'll just have to decrease so that nature can increase. After all, we're often told that the best thing for the environment is fewer people. Some environmentalists even talk about culling the human herd. Of course, the more squeamish among them wouldn't quite go that far, but most still agree that humans are nature's biggest problem. So then it shouldn't surprise us when this new exaltation of nature and diminishment of man shows up in our language, like with the word ecocide. Side comes from the Latin word meaning killer or slayer. Until now, it only applied to the killing of people. Homicide, fratricide, and more recently, genocide. It's never really been used to describe the death of an animal or an inanimate object until now. Of course, some Christians have wrongly interpreted Genesis 1 to mean they can do anything they want with nature, but that's not what the Bible means by dominion. God's image bearers are to steward the creation in a way that protects it and that promotes human flourishing. Our dominion over nature reflects God's dominion over us. But that's only possible if we begin with an exalted view of man. Of all the created order, only humans are even aware of how their actions impact the rest of creation, and only humans can tend to creation and undo any damage done. But reducing humanity's place in the world will just take away the only reason we have to even try. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
20 minutes past the hour, Kevin Williams.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. All is quiet on the weather scene now, but a potent disturbance coming in from the southwest will deliver rain later this week. Going to kick up the wind, and some damaging gusts will be possible east of the Great Lakes come Friday morning. Colder air will arrive over the weekend. Some lake effect rain showers and snow flurries are likely for some. In forecast form for this afternoon, on balance, partly sunny, mild, the high in the 60s. Rather cloudy tonight and tomorrow with a shower here, a little drizzle there. Thursday, cloudy, breezy, showers evolve into a soaking rain. High temperatures Thursday, mid-50s to the mid-60s. Some strong winds are likely in western New York and northwest Pennsylvania. Thursday night going into Friday.
Thank you, Kevin. If you're just joining us, here's some of the stories we're following for you today, Tuesday, October 29th. The National Security Council's top Ukraine expert testifying in the House impeachment inquiry today, Army Lieutenant Colonel Andrew Vidman, says he didn't think it was appropriate to, quote, demand that a foreign government investigate a U.S. citizen. President Trump pushed for an investigation of former VP Joe Biden and his son Hunter during a phone call with Ukraine's president, Florida Senator Marco Rubio.
Impeachment's a really big deal. It's really bad for the country. It's traumatic. I wonder how many of these House members were elected to do this.
Ohio Republican Jim Jordan says the whistleblower who prompted the probe still isn't known. That bothers him.
The American people don't get to know that. Only Adam Schiff knows. And it's been 78 days. At least 78 days since he learned that information, and no one else knows in the entire country of 300 million people. That's what troubles me more than anything else.
Ukraine's president announcing today that no one from his country will be taking part in the Democratic impeachment probe of President Trump, a House vote set for Thursday. We got them both. President Trump confirming today that this past weekend's raid that took out the leader of ISIS also killed the terror group's number two guy. South Carolina Republican Lindsey Graham says even though the leadership of ISIS has been neutralized, the terror group's still very much a threat.
We just killed their spiritual leader of the ISIS movement. That's like, you know, Hitler without, you know, Nazis without without Hitler. So this is a big deal. Mr. President, keep your foot on the throat of these ISIS fighters. Make sure they don't come here.
Graham says he's also concerned ISIS may use the death of their leader to stage new attacks. Congress wants answers as Boeing pushes to get its 737 MAX jetliner back in the air after two deadly crashes last year.
We are sorry, deeply and truly sorry.
Boeing CEO Dennis Muilenburg apologized to the families of two deadly 737 MAX crashes, some of whom fought to display photos of their dead loved ones at the hearing.
We've made mistakes, and we got some things wrong.
Lawmakers say they're concerned Boeing hid safety flaws in the aircraft. Mississippi Republican Senator Roger Wicker.
We need to know if Boeing and the FAA rushed to certify the MAX.
Steve Dorsey, Washington.
California continues to burn on both ends. The wind's a problem today. The good news, those winds expected to die down tomorrow. Time's getting tougher for the nation's top e-cigarette maker.
Juul reportedly plans to cut around 500 jobs as the company braces for more PR and regulatory fallout. The Wall Street Journal reports Juul will also reduce its marketing budget and invest in new ways to reduce underage vaping. The company's facing a possible ban on the flavored products that make up more than 80% of its U.S. sales, as well as several federal investigations and new scrutiny from the FDA over a mystery lung illness linked to vaping.
Vicky Barker reporting Taco Bell giving away free Doritos Locos Tacos tomorrow thanks to a stolen base during the World Series. Washington Nationals shortstop Trey Turner prompted the giveaway after stealing a base during Game 1 of the Fall Classic. The fast food chain once again running its steal a base, steal a taco promotion. You can stop by any Taco Bell tomorrow from 2 to 6 p.m. steal your free taco. 25 minutes past the hour. Next at noon, Sexuality and the Church. Special conference will take place next month at the Family Life Center in Bath, New York. The keynote speaker will be Gary Ingram. He's with the Love and Truth Network in Glendale, Arizona. Gary recently sat down with our very own Bob Price to talk about the issue of sexuality and why it's so vital for the church, the culture, and the family to deal with. Let's listen in.
My wife, Melissa, and I founded Love and Truth Network about 6 years ago, and the purpose of the ministry is to help equip the church, as well as Christian educational institutions, colleges, universities, and campus ministries, secular campus ministries, for the sake of developing an awareness of how to minister effectively in the area of restoring relational and sexual wholeness.
So how have you done in the 6 years, Gary? Are churches better equipped than they were 6 years ago when it comes to this difficult issue? Sexuality?
Well, I think that there are some, for sure, that are better equipped than they once were, but I think that's a very small percentage of the body of Christ. What we have are churches that are largely either kind of stuck in a traditional perspective. When I say traditional, I value tradition, but they kind of thump on truth, but are very shallow on love and compassion, or where churches more recently, young pastors have risen up who don't want to be anything like that, and the pendulum has swung in the opposite direction, where there's very little truth, particularly around the topic of human sexuality, being shared. And my concern is that there's actually a false gospel going out that does not require repentance or surrender or sanctification. And then there are churches, many churches kind of in the middle, who believe what the Bible says is true, but they don't know how to effectively live this out in their church communities.
Every day in the news, Gary, we are bombarded with stories that deal with these issues, these weighty issues that go to the core of who we are as Christians in a post-Christian culture. Gender lines blurred, the agenda of the LGBTQ community, and it's really difficult to navigate, especially if you're a parent, to teach them what it means to be a godly man, what Christian masculinity looks like. Masculinity, Gary, almost a dirty word in our culture today. Talk to those parents of young kids who are really struggling with how to mirror what godly masculinity looks like.
Well, one of the things we love to talk about, and it honestly, it's probably the foundation of our ministry, is Genesis 1, 26 and 27, where God makes us male and female in his image. And so you can see that in our culture today, that is really under attack. We as pastors and leaders and helpers and as followers of Jesus, need to re-embrace and understand the glory and the wonder of being made in God's image, not as just humans, but as male and female. That whole idea of differences in gender is hugely under attack, and we want to actually highlight the good of that.
Gary Ingram is our guest today, Executive Director of Love and Truth Network, based out of Glendale, Arizona. You're going to be speaking at an event on November 9th, 9 till 3:30 at the Family Life Center called Sexuality and the Church. You've already kind of hit it on this a little bit, Gary, but again, explain why this is such an important conference and why people who may be listening right now should make a point of attending.
Well, the reality is these issues are some of the most difficult and the most divisive issues of our time. There'll be three main topics on Saturday on the 9th, and we'll be touching on statistics in the state of the church. We'll be touching on how do we shift our environments to really become fertile ground that is both safe and transformational in our churches and Christian communities. And then also we'll be talking in the third segment a lot about LGBT community. What does science actually show in that regard? And in each segment, we will have a large block of time for Q&A. The conference is for pastors, counselors, helpers, Christian leaders, also for parents who have kids that are struggling in a variety of ways. And it's also for people themselves that want to see if maybe Jesus has something more for me than surrendering my life to an LGBTQ ideology or pornography addiction or other forms of sexual brokenness.
So pretty much it's for everybody.
It's
for everybody. Don't think just because you don't have a title or something involved with the church per se, if you're a concerned parent, a concerned mom or dad who has young young kids who are exposed to some of the stuff we've talked about today on a daily basis in our culture, come get some answers, some godly, biblical answers. And then finally, what would you like to have accomplished through this event? What are some of the key outcomes or takeaways for those who attend this day-long seminar?
Well, what we've heard from a number of people who have been at our past seminars or leadership summits is that they came expecting with their pen and pad in hand to take some notes about how to help the quote-unquote poor LGBT folk that they may know in their family or in their communities or whatever. And what they walk away with is, oh my goodness, God has something deep and profound for me. Mm-hmm. The reality is those that come to Jesus, whether it's out of the LGBT community or any other community, we need Jesus. That's the bottom line. We need Jesus and we need to surrender. And so what we desire for people to walk away with from this particular day, November 9th, is a deep sense of God's invitation for them to go deeper in relationship with him and then also understand more about the development process of same-sex attraction and transgenderism and how they can be more compassionate and how they can begin to separate ideology from individuals. Mm-hmm. We want to be really compassionate and loving and gracious and share truth with individuals, but we also want to know how can we stand against without attacking, how can we stand against ideology that is growing in culture.
Thank you, guys. Gary Ingram with the Love and Truth Network in Glendale, Arizona, speaking with our very own Bob Price. That conference, Sexuality and the Church, will take place Saturday, November 9th at Family Life Center, 9 a.m. till 3 p.m. You can go to fln.org/events for more information.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. All is quiet on the weather scene now, but a potent disturbance coming in from the southwest will deliver rain later this week. Going to kick up the wind and some damaging gusts will be possible east of the Great Lakes come Friday morning. Colder air will arrive over the weekend. Some lake effect rain showers and snow flurries are likely for some. In forecast form for this afternoon, on balance, partly sunny, mild, the high in the 60s. Rather cloudy tonight and tomorrow with a shower here, a little drizzle there. Thursday, cloudy, breezy, showers evolve into a soaking rain. High temperatures Thursday, mid-50s to the mid-60s. Some strong winds are likely in western New York and northwest Pennsylvania. Thursday night going into Friday.
Thank you, Kevin Williams. Finally at noon, meet retired U.S. Army Major Brandon Tucker. He is the new Guinness World Record holder for the most pull-ups in 24 hours.
I think we're all capable of whatever we set our minds to, so I think we all hold ourselves back.
The 192-pounder from Fort Benning, Georgia, finished 7,715 pull-ups in one day. Tucker says he did it for his late mother. That is the world we live in this Tuesday. As always, thanks for coming along. I'm Bill Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to The Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.